Welcome to Everything EOS, born out of the EOS community for the EOS community. Join us as we dive into the ever-evolving world of Web3, explore the game-changing ideas and technologies that are powering the renaissance of GameFi, DeFi, DAOs, NFTs, and more on EOS. I'm your host, Brandon Lovejoy, and I'm joined by the legendary Zach Gall as my co-host today. And our guest today is Idan Zuckerman. Idan is co-founder and co-CEO at Upland, the Metaverse super app, the top application on EOS, and a top five gaming app across all blockchains by daily active users. Before we go any further, don't forget to like, subscribe, and comment on this video to let us know what you think and to give a little nudge for the old YouTube algorithm. It helps our content reach a wider audience. Idan, how you doing today? Glad to have you.
Doing really well. Thanks for having me, guys. Glad to be back. I think probably last time Upland was on the EOS podcast was years ago, so happy to be back.
Yeah, we go way back. I met Dirk at the EOS hackathon in San Francisco in November 2018. I think it was around the time the EOS VC investment. It wasn't public yet, and Dirk kind of told me about it at the event. He was telling me about Upland, describing it. It's kind of like a Monopoly game. I don't even know if Metaverse was even a term people were using yet. But
the funny thing is that, you know, Upland's domain is upland.me, and you know, we chose that for Metaverse. But back then, you know, when we were beginning, nobody knew what Metaverse was. Nobody knew what NFT were. Mm. We just like hid all those things in the background. But I think at the end of the day, we got it right, I think.
But hiding things in the background is kind of the secret sauce, which we will get into in a bit. But that's one of the superpowers of Upland as far as like abstracting the blockchain from end users, abstracting the blockchain for developers building on top of the Upland Metaverse. So we'll get into all of that. But why don't we, I guess, just what is Upland for anyone who hasn't been following along for the last, 5 years now?
Yeah. So Upland is a metaverse that is mapped to the real world. It kind of like started as kind of like a monopoly on steroids. So, you know, at the very base level, you can own in Upland properties that are mapped to real world addresses. And you actually see them as parcels of the map, the same way you would see them on Zillow or kind of like other real estate platforms. But then once you own the land, there's so much depth behind it. So you can develop it and you can, you know, engage with local communities and you can play games around it. And it kind of like also now today, like you said, it has become a super app where you can launch different experiences that are outside of Upland, but use kind of like Upland as kind of like the economical foundation, the identity system, you know, your social connections, et cetera. So, you know, if I were to go to cover everything about Upland, it would probably take me 30 minutes. And at the end of the day, we call it now the Metaverse super app, right? So it's kind of like this foundation that mirrors the real world and gives your basically digital existence context in terms of, you know, a geolocation, an economy, you know, your social connections, your local friends, the space, the assets, right? Everything in Upland, by the way, all of its economy is powered by blockchain. So every digital asset in Upland is either a fungible or an unfungible token. But in Upland, again, you mentioned, Zach, that we are kind of like, we obfuscate things right in the background. And part of our, you know, magic that makes Upland accessible for mass consumer markets is the fact that you can really easily onboard, right? You don't necessarily have to know anything about blockchain or private keys or wallets. You still enjoy true ownership in the means that we as operators do not have access to your private keys or kind of like any of your digital assets, but you are free to trade your digital assets in an open economy. And you can do that directly to fiat currency. And this is part of the magic, right? So with very ease, you can take any NFT that you own. It can be a car, it can be a property, it can be outdoor decor, it could be one of the goals from the recent FIFA World Cup, which we had. We have a partnership with FIFA 4. And you can sell them directly, let's say for US dollars. And everything is trustless in a single, you know, in a single transaction. The only caveat is that because of that, because we're also kind of like fully compliant with US-based regulation and by that virtue also with the rest of the world, that means that our cryptocurrency, which is Apex, our virtual currency in the game, is not tradable in exchanges. And that allows us to maintain regulatory compliance. And one other very you know, differentiating thing that it allows us is it allows Appland to be available on all the common mobile platforms. So the iOS app stores, the Google Play Store, but you can also play on desktop or mobile web as well.
So I remember talking to Dirk at B1 June back in 2019, and that's when I believe the payment rails were kind of coming to fruition. Do you, so since you've had all of the interactions and you understand the policies to get into the app stores, both Apple and Android, they have their limitations, and it seems like blockchain projects, anything touching NFTs, have a very difficult time to get those fiat payment rails, and it does have some limitations. So you have to kind of sandbox your application a bit, similar to how you guys did. Do you think that that's something temporary, or do you think that's the app stores are going to keep the iron fists on blockchain applications?
That's a great question, and it has several depths to it. So it's not just about compliance. Keep in mind that, again, the app store, again, there's a lot of good things and great things about the app store. There's a lot of limitations about the app store. One of the limitations is that, you know, as an app, you get categorized. So you can be either a game or a marketplace, and you can't be both, right? So now we are categorized as a game, right? And this is basically, it's part of the easy draw is, okay, you are basically a gaming ecosystem at the end of the day. But that means also that for fiat transactions, there is the 30% platform fees imposed. And this is something that we cannot have our consumers take a hit with, right? If somebody wants to sell one of an iPhone for $10, they can't be making only $7 out of that because of kind of like platform fees. So this is why basically the fiat off-ramp in Appland is only available outside of the app stores through mobile web as of now. But that's the main reason at the end of the day. I think these policies will evolve because I think, you know, the world is ever-changing and everything is blending together, right? Like, it's no longer really clear to understand what is a game, what is a marketplace, what is a real economy, what is a game economy. Is there even a difference, right? And there's a lot of different kind of like, you know, regulation, you know, points that it touches. I think it will evolve over time, but these things takes a lot of time. So today we are kind of like trying to, you know, I think a lot of projects in the Web3 space tend to ignore regulation completely, if they're based outside of the US. For us, it's been a bit different. We've been trying to kind of like understand regulation, and we came to the realization that if we can be compliant, right, if you can work, I want to say around the regulation, but in lockstep with the regulation as it's evolving, there's a better opportunity to reach wider mass audiences that are, you know, that don't necessarily understand, you know, Web3 marketplaces, and they are on mobile devices all day, and they know, you know, they find things through the app stores, right? So I think that's part of our uniqueness in the way we've been approaching things since day one, actually since, you know, 2018 when we started ideating this platform.
Yeah, I mean, there are ways to, I guess, get around the app store. I know there's some applications that stay in beta mode forever because there's less restrictions, but all of those workarounds, they might be nice in the short term, but you have a big risk of getting pulled from the app stores and then basically kind of screwed at that point. So I think I agree with your approach, is just work within their confines, deal with it, and hopefully it matures over time, and hopefully some of those restrictions either loosen up or just conform to Web3. And the good thing is that Upland's not, and EOS, we're not the only ones fighting this battle against the app stores. It's even beyond Web3, even Twitter Blue, for example. I couldn't even pay for it within the app. It was like, go to the website basically, because it's a way to get around all of the fees. It's a constant thing.
So you mentioned FIFA, and Upland has a number of really extraordinary partnerships, NFL, UNICEF, I noticed. And then even the artist and icon, Jackie Tsai, if I'm saying that name correctly. How did you get connected with all these extraordinary organizations? Like, are there any that you care to highlight in particular?
Yeah, so first of all, just a small correction, it's the NFL Player Association, not the NFL League. But yeah, absolutely. We have a great partnership with FIFA that is ongoing. We're also going to continue it with the FIFA Women's World Cup. And we have some also unannounced news to come as well. We had Jackie Tsai is an amazing artist that worked with us for a couple of now. We're actually just now selling the second collection. And what's interesting is these things have utility, actually. It's not just collectibles. So with Jackie Tsai, you know, we had like outdoor decor. So in Halloween, you were able to take his design and actually decorate your homes in Auckland with them. And again, this is a returning, kind of like a repeating motif, right? Like everything in Auckland at the end of the day has some kind of utility, either gamification context or actual things that you can use with those NFTs. And so it's not just about collectibles. It's kind of like we think about it the other way around. These are an integral part of the economy. And if you have IP attached to it, then it just makes it a bit more valuable, right? Because it has now more stops. Same with cars. And by the way, we have a lot of cool partnerships that are still unannounced that are in the pipeline. And we're just waiting for them to be, you know, to be at a point where we can announce them. But again, this portfolio keeps going. And I think when we speak with brands, it becomes an easier sell, especially with the geo context, right? Once you understand everything is mapped to the real world, it immediately makes sense how real world locations help here. So one small example with the NFL Player Association, we have reproduced kind of like stadiums around the US. And the context is that when, you know, you can go to that stadium and participate in minting events that occur in correspondence with when games actually are played. So again, as a player, you actually know where you need to go. You don't need to explain to anybody, right? If I need to go to the Kansas City Stadium because there's a game going on there, I don't need any special instructions for the players who understand how the mechanics work. You know, same things with, you know, car and car plants or like, you know, other contextualized elements. And this blending of the real and virtual world is something that feels really well for brands. Same with, by the way, with FIFA. We've kind of like opened in the previous World Cup, we've opened World Cup Village in Qatar and actually, you know, built the first monument in Qatar, the Lusail Stadium, where the World Cup final was held. Later on, we're going to also create a World Cup themed racetrack around Qatar. It's going to be one of the first official racetracks in Auckland. So again, that context really, really helps when speaking with brands and partners.
And I think it helps with the continuous expansion of your user base, which, as we mentioned in the intro, it's a top 5 app according to Dapp Radar by daily active users. So incredible job there. And as I see it, as part of your business model, is you have this augmented reality for your metaverse. It's a real world map mapped to your metaverse. And it seems like every couple weeks you're expanding to a brand new city. So by aligning yourselves, like FC Porto is a good example because they're basically the local team and city. And whenever you're about to expand into a new city for a new, what do you call the land sales? I'm not sure of the actual term you use when you expand.
Use the city releases
It's a really good way to get the attention of that local population because you have your probably core users who, regardless of the city you expand to, they're buying land, they're selling land, they're playing around in that new city. But then you probably gain a lot of new users based on people who are in that city because they're following the soccer team or whatnot. I love watching you guys grow in these partnerships, the big names. It's incredible. And I do agree with the IP too. There's incredible amount of value to it. It's like when you shop for clothes, like some clothes have like your favorite sports team logo, or you could buy the plain colored shirt with nothing on it. Like a lot of people like to represent their teams or their favorite brands. And by bringing recognized brands into the metaverse, they have more inherent value than just some generic car. Like I'd rather have a Ferrari than red car with convertible, like with no name.
Absolutely. And I would add to that, this also leaves room for a whole level of UGC creation. So I'll give you an example. When when Jackie Tsai sold his Halloween decor in Auckland, like a structure ornaments. So that was basically branded Halloween. So Halloween decor. And you know, Jackie Tsai put his price point and that's only up for him to decide how much he wants to sell those for. But then somebody who is a UGC creator in Auckland, and again, for everything, we have also a UGC backbone as well. So people today can go and they can build a manufacturing plant in Auckland and start creating out structure ornaments for either Halloween or whatever. We have different seasons in Auckland that you can create structure ornaments for. So they can create, do their own creations and set their own price. Now, if it's unbranded without an IP, that's perfectly fine. But players can still have awesome creations unbranded and have those in the marketplace as primary or resale in Upland. And I think that that methodology of basically working together both with brands, but also allowing user-generated content, creates an economy that is more inclusive, because maybe I can't afford a Jekyll side piece, and that's fine, but that doesn't mean I can't participate in Halloween and decorate my home, because I can go to the unbranded stuff and still, you know, be part of the economy. Same works with cars, same works with everything else we do in Upland.
So as a creator in this economy, how does that work? How do people create in-game assets and how do they earn?
Yeah, so the foundations of the economy are pretty simple, but then basically the ins and outs are intricate. So at the baseline, we have two, let's call it three resources in Upland. The first one is obvious, the lab, right? So whatever you need to do, you need space, right? The second one is Apex. It's our virtual currency. And this is how you carry value in Upland, how you can move value around by transferring Apex around. And then the third one is called Spark, which is a resource you need to stake when you want to build things, right? So if I'm a user and I'm new to Upland, so first of all, I'll need some kind of land. And on that land, I can build a factory. Okay, it will take me some time, it will take me some Spark. But then once I have that factory, I can apply for what we call a meta venture, which is a player-run business. And then I can designate that factory, let's say, as a structure ornament factory. I will then submit my structure ornament designs to the team. We have an approval process, similar but smaller than, let's say, the Apple approval process. And then once my designs are approved, I can start manufacturing them. Also, I use Spark to manufacture them. Once they're manufactured, I'm able to set my price and distribute them either to player showrooms or sell it on my own to other players. So it's a full-fledged economy with kind of like mini businesses and mini entrepreneurs in the system. It's actually been working really great, keeping in mind that we're also launching it in phases. So little by little, there are more and more entrepreneurs in Upland and more creators. But I think this is one of the more exciting elements of the ecosystem. And this basically, think about it, allows players to start creating and working on cool NFTs without having to know anything about blockchain or minting or wallets, right? Everything is immersive and gamified. And all of these things are like cool 3D objects that have utility in the game. But now the really interesting part comes when we opened up Upland to third-party developers. It now, as a creator and an entrepreneur, it allows me to bring even more value by attaching anything I develop outside of Upland to make use of these NFTs that I'm kind of like creating in Upland. So now I can inject extra value and make them more valuable and more kind of like desirable for other players to own.
So we're getting back to that topic of making things easy and removing all of the friction. So removing the friction for a creator. I'm a creator. I don't know blockchain, but I can still participate in the economy of Upland without understanding anything about the blockchain. And then we have your end users, which we talked about. You have a very large user base. And I believe the secret sauce there is it's super easy to get onboarded, because a lot of times when you try to onboard people in the blockchain who are not already there, you're going to lose more than half of them whenever you start talking about your seed phrases and private keys and gas or staking for CPU. And Upland, for the end users, you completely abstract all of that. You want to kind of just walk us through the model of, if you're a brand new user, how you could actually get signed up and start interacting with the blockchain without even knowing you're signing up to the blockchain or transacting?
Yeah. And by the way, this is where, you know, EOS comes in, because again, circle back to 2018, right? There was basically Ethereum or EOS that we could adapt. We started to look at Ethereum. We quickly understood that it's not going to work for us, because again, coming from a mix of, you know, casual gaming space and decentralized ecology space, right? We knew that if we were now, let's say, asking our users to pay gas every time they collected their temporary earnings, which may amount to a couple of fractions of a cent, right? And they have to pay like $2 gas for it. It's just not going to fly, right? We needed something a bit more robust that would help us kind of like make things easy. And this is one of the main reasons why we chose EOS.io in the first place, now Antelope. So that has been working phenomenally for us. And in Upland, there is like a very elaborate model where when you start out in Upland, there's actually a free-to-play mode. And when you start playing, you don't really enjoy true ownership. We actually have like a pool of EOS accounts in the background, and you get assigned one of these accounts from the pool. We control the private keys for those. These are like the visitor accounts. And when the main reason is, again, running an open economy is really, really hard. And, you know, in the gaming space, like even the best games lose whatever, 30 to 40% of the installs in the next day after the install, right? But you still at that day zero, you want to hit those installs with a value proposition. You want to let them enjoy, you know, owning a property, trying to do something in the game, being able to interact. And you can't expect them to pay for it, right? To basically pay for that account. Now, for all these lapsed users that don't come back, we need the ability to recycle all these assets that they utilize in favor of the company. And this is why for the visitors in Upland, we control the private keys. But then once you start engaging in Upland, right? And once you've accumulated a net worth of 10,000 APEX, which equates to a roughly $10 worth of value by either, you know, either walking your way through it over time or just buying some APEX or buying properties, you then graduate to what we call an Uplander. At that point, your client, which is a very smart client, creates an account dedicated to you on EOS. So this happens directly from the client to the EOS mainnet. And that means that we are never exposed to the private keys of that account. And then basically you now have a dedicated account in EOS. Your client is the only thing that is able to basically decipher your private keys. And now every digital asset gets moved to your account that you already owned. Any new asset will be minted or moved to using your, you know, EOS account that is private to you. And then every time that you need to interact with an asset or move it around, your client will sign it for you directly with a token. So that's kind of like the general, you know, without going into too much technical details, although, you know, if you want to elaborate there, you know, I'd be happy to.
Yeah, I mean, I actually think you undersold it, because like the free to play, like you're right, you can't ask a user to pay money before they even try the game. Like the free to play model as the norm now, it's really taken over. But then the other piece is if you're attracting a new user, they're not already like Web3 native, like if the first thing you're doing, even if it's free somehow, but you're asking them to like store private keys and seed phrases, you're going to lose them. So with Upland, you're able to sign up with your login with an email and password, for example. And in the background, with those new user accounts that you described, the blockchain component's happening, but the end user doesn't see or touch it. And that's a beautiful thing. And then when you talked about the reasons for choosing EOS, I agree 100%. And that's why I love the fact that on Antelope Chains, the application itself could cover all of the resource costs of their end users. Because if you think of any game, a typical game might have their in-game token, and then they probably have a bunch of NFTs. So by requiring resources, whether it's gas on Ethereum or staking CPU on EOS, that's a third token you need to integrate, third type of token. So you have NFTs, you have your native token, and then you have your protocol token to cover gas. Like that's overcomplicating things. Like even the NFTs and the native token is going to be a lot for a new user, let's say. So you're adding this extra layer of, now I got to hold this other token to pay gas for every transaction. No, with Upland and with a well-architected game on EOS, the end user doesn't have to own any tokens. They don't have to pay for their own account in the case of Upland. And they don't have to sign every transaction because your client is signing the transactions for them, because that would ruin the gaming experience too. If I'm playing a game and my Anchor wallet pops up every minute or two and asks me to sign something, that's going to be really annoying really quick. So with your client, it's basically signing on your behalf, but in a way that Upland doesn't have access to your keys because the keys are hosted within the local environment. Really cool.
Exactly. It's an interesting story about that. Because again, so we very early on, we were, you know, in constant communications with the developer team from Venblock One. And we knew, again, you mentioned gas prices, but we knew we always had to find a way to subsidize the blockchain costs for our players. And actually, one of our requests that we made to the development team made it to the production build of EOS, and that was the ability basically to stake resources in favor of a different user that is not yourself. And this allowed us a whole new approach where we said, okay, blockchain, running a public blockchain has a cost, right? To drive the value proposition, you have to pay a lot of money and resources. If you don't pay that, it means that it's not a public blockchain. You're not delivering the value proposition of true ownership, right? There's no separation between the operator and kind of like the player. So what we did, we devised this model that allows us to subsidize the cost, and then we treat the blockchain cost similar to how we treat any other backend cost, right? Be it whatever, AWS servers or whatever type of things we pay for. That's an item that we pay for. We pay for blockchain costs for our users, and then we compile that into our business model. And that's absolutely the way it needs to be. Again, like you mentioned, there's no reason in a basically gaming platform or ecosystem to have a token that's utilized just for funding blockchain costs, right? There has to be a way for whoever's running the ecosystem to be able to pay that for the players. And it doesn't matter if you charge them for it later on, either in subscription models or you bake it in somehow to your business model. That's absolutely the way it has to be.
I agree. It blows my mind that there's still applications not doing that. DeFi in particular, because the idea is put the resource costs within your business model. If you're able to earn revenue, like take it out of your revenue, your profit margin. So like a good example of this is if you're a DEX, and if I try to make a trade, the DEX itself is making money off of that trade. It's probably making 0.3% of whatever I'm trading, and that might get distributed to a couple of different parties, but there's money being earned. The cost of an EOS transaction is like a thousandth of a penny. So if I go to make a trade on a DEX and it fails my transaction because my resources aren't being covered, that's just a lost opportunity because they might lose me and I might not even make the trade. But if they just cover my resources, a thousandth of a penny is all they're paying, then even if I'm making like a $15 swap, they're probably making they're definitely making that thousandth of a penny back. Put it into your business model. Just like you said, like your AWS bill isn't like, you don't see it. Whenever I pay a dollar for an item, it doesn't have an extra 3 cents to the AWS bill. That's insane.
Yeah, and exactly. I mean, different companies can choose different ways they do business. It's just when you obfuscate this for the end user, when you make it easy for them, it will pay back and you'll be able to reach, you know, larger audiences.
So making it easy for creators, making it easy for end users. Let's get back into developers. So you guys have a robust SDK. We announced a hackathon together at the Game Developer Conference where we were just a couple weeks ago. So the SDK essentially allows third-party application developers to build on top of the Upland metaverse, and their application can even be separate. You showed me that racing game at GDC, and it was a completely different application, but it was leveraging the Upland metaverse. And underneath everything, there's EOS resources being consumed. There's NFTs being minted and moved around on the EOS blockchain. But for the developer, they don't see any of that. You guys have abstracted all of that. So you want to kind of talk about what your strategy is to really grow this metaverse and make it so that there's third-party applications building on top of it, and how you guys have made it just super easy for them to do that.
Yeah, absolutely. So again, like you said, similar to how we, you know, obfuscated the complexity of blockchain to end users, we wanted to do the same for developers. And we realized, again, today if there are X amount of developers that are savvy in blockchain technology and know how to code smart contracts, there are probably 100X developers that know how to program with APIs. So again, all of our developer ecosystem relies on a very simple infrastructure. And the infrastructure is basically goes like this. You have the, first of all, like you mentioned, it's client agnostic. So all of the connection is made at the backend, right? We don't allow developers to create experiences inside of Upland, right? You don't need to develop like you do for Roblox, for example, where you have to code specifically for that environment. You can code your own game, experience, service, whatever, And it can be a mobile app. It can be a desktop Windows game. It could be whatever, a JavaScript website. It doesn't matter. All of the connection is made at the backend. So the first element is being able to map users from your ecosystem to users to Upland users, right? And when you try to do that, there's a very simple way that you can do it. The Uplander gets triggered with a code in the Upland app. They feed it into your app. Boom. Both users are connected. And from now on, from that moment of that connection, you are then able to query all through APIs, all of the users' assets that they own in Upland. But you can also ask them to basically give up ownership of any asset into escrow that you manage as a developer, right? So these are fancy words. What does that mean? So let's imagine if somebody now, let's say, builds a new racing client for Upland. The Upland racing client is just you want to create a better game, or you want to create like, I don't know, have you ever played the game Death Track, where it's kind of like you have cars, but you can also shoot missiles and, you know, and shoot guns at each other. So you want to create that type of a racing game for Upland, right? So at that point, what I would do is I would ask you, if you were a player of mine, to basically connect your identity to Upland. Then I'd be able to see all of your cars and how much Apex you have. And let's say the race goes like, you know, you have 10 cars and you get to buy into a race. Everybody puts 1,000 Apex, and then the winner takes whatever, 9,000 Apex. The developer keeps the final 1,000 Apex, right? So at that point, I as a developer would ask you, okay, choose your car from the assets, because I can query your assets, so I can show you a list of your cars that you own. You choose your whatever, your Ferrari. And then I say, great. Now, I'm going to ask you to put that Ferrari in escrow and also put 1,000 Apex into escrow. And all of the 10 players do the same, right? And then when the race ends, I'm going to resolve that escrow. So I'm going to give everybody their cars back. Maybe there was some damage inflicted, so I can inflict damage, right? Because now the developer temporarily owns these assets, so I can do things like inflict damage to them, right? Whereas if you own them, you could. And then I would pay back the winner, the 9,000 Apex, and that's it. So that basically, that kind of like asset resolution system resolves the question of how can I, right, as a developer, interact with player assets if they truly own them, right? You have to basically temporarily give up ownership if you want somebody else to be able to resolve those assets, be it fungible tokens or non-fungible tokens. So we made it really, really easy for developers. So this is the first kind of like two sets of items that we put into production. And then this also allows you another mode, and these are things that we're working on right now, is basically we're now putting in play-to-earn modes that you can basically really easily implement by just interacting with our APIs. I'll give you one very small example. If I have a skill game, let's say chess, right? So I can create, you know, using the first two elements that I described, I can create a competitive chess mode where maybe the chess pieces are NFTs, and whoever, you know, eats another piece, they get to keep that NFT, right? So this is done using those escrow services, etc. But once we implement things like tournaments in Upland, right, we create in Upland the infrastructure of, let's say, bracket tournaments. So now everything is, you have a play-to-earn mode that is actually tournaments in Upland. And as a developer, all I need to do is just say, I want to create a tournament, and then I'm going to just report all the participants' scores. Upland will basically take care of all the management of kind of like how to resolve the tournaments, how to set up the rounds, how to advance all the way to the finals, etc. So we want to make it really easy for developers to take their offerings and create different types of play-to-earn modes to them using the Upland economy. I'll take a pause here. It's a bit of...
That's a lot. So I'm so glad we had time to really talk deeply about this at GDC, because I said this earlier, you're underselling it. Because the developer, they get access to the APIs, which abstracts the blockchain, which is great, and abstracts creating their own escrow contract. But you guys also are able to kind of allow them to tap into your payment rails. And you have a KYC system for exiting. So if people want to cash out, they got to go through a KYC process. This is usually something that every single project needs to do. And it's kind of like reinventing the wheel. Every single project has to do the same things. Whereas you guys already solved these problems years ago, and anyone building on top of Upland, they're able to basically just tap into that. And it's less friction beyond the blockchain stuff, you're removing the friction from interfacing with the real world too.
Exactly. Because again, if I'm an indie developer and I have a skill game, the prospect of me offering a play to earn mode with off ramps, right? And if I live in the US, no chance, right? It will take you like months and years to figure this out, like which service to use. We make it super simple. And you mentioned those offers as a service, like KYC as a service, offer as a service, also governance as a service, by the way. We have a governance system in Upland. You can vote in Upland if you have an home address. We can allow you as a developer to basically take all of your players that have connected to you and put something to a vote to them. And the vote will show to them and you'll get the result, right? Like, why would you need to bother about these things as a developer? Just focus on your game creation, right? And inject all these Web3 elements, right? The space, the community, the off-rails, right? The liquidity, you know. If you're a game and you want to introduce the concept of land, right? Don't sell land on your own. That's insane. The prospect of that succeeding and kind of like, and then the efforts you would make into it would be, you know, unimaginable. But if I went to Upland, I just took over a space, I called it my own, and then it is my own because I truly own it, and then I can make whatever I want out of it. So this could be my land in the world. So I can introduce these concepts of Web3 elements to my games. And there are so many indie developers today around the world, like teams of, you know, two guys and girls, right? 3, 5, 10. There are, it's hard today as an indie developer to rise above the noise, right? If you want to take your game to Steam, right? It's going to be very hard for you to compete against all of the other games and all of the other indie teams. I think Web3 gives an opportunity to basically rise a bit above the noise by basically injecting a lot of these innovative concepts into the next generation of gaming. I think that's an important note. If you're an indie developer today and you want to basically be somehow present, tap into whole new communities that are actually looking for this mindset, and better serving your existing community with the ability to earn and to compete and to create value and to extract value and to vote, right? Web3 is like a great place to look at.
It was really cool to meet you all at GDC, and I'm sure you had a great opportunity to connect with a ton of indie developers at GDC. I'm curious about your experience there and, yeah, how developers can learn more and how they can get plugged into the Upland ecosystem. Two part.
Yeah, so I think it's always great to meet with developers. One thing about GDC was, you know, Web3 was much more present than I would have expected, even given the kind of like the post-hype phases, etc. So I think that's up and kicking, and that's great to see. I always have the experience that when I sit with, you know, Web2 indie developers, it always takes me 10 minutes to drive in the value proposition of Web3, right? So at the beginning, they don't get it. And the second time, they kind of get it. And then the third time, they're like, oh, okay, I get, you know, now I get it. And so I think there's a lot of education element to be done. But I'm so confident that the gaming industry will move there. I mean, today, if forget about developers, go to a gamer, to the average gamer. Ask them, what do you think about NFTs? The knee-jerk reaction is, I hate NFTs. We don't want NFTs. So then he said, oh, so you want to tell me you don't want to really own your digital assets. You don't want to be able to resell your assets if you're exiting a game. And they're going like, no, yeah, of course I want that. Okay, so you do want the NFTs. You just don't want the shitty NFTs that you know, speculative projects and things that kind of like are badly designed, right? So I think there's a lot of education to be done here. I think you asked like, how can people get involved with Upland? I think the hackathon we're running right now is a great opportunity. It's a prolonged hackathon. It's going to peak in June in Genesis Week. This is our yearly celebration of Upland's minting of the first property that we do in person in Las Vegas. And we're going to have six teams pitching in that occasion for the finalists for the hackathon. The hackathon is a great way to start interacting with the tools because, A, first of all, it's fun. There are cool prizes to be won there. And it's a great introduction, basically, to Web3. And again, I can't stress enough how easy it is, right? I like, literally, if you're a skilled developer, it will take you 2 or 3 days to plug into our ecosystem, any existing offering that you have or anything new that you're working on.
And all of those links are in the description. I'll get my finger on the screen, all in the description for the hackathon, for the developer Discord. Everything will be in the description.
Yeah, it looks like the submission deadline is May 26th. And you said the final award ceremony is June 9th. And there's a final award ceremony in Vegas. What else is going on in Vegas? Is it like just a one-day event or is it a bunch of fun stuff?
So, yeah, so in Upland, we have a thing called Genesis Week. It's become a tradition now. So every year we celebrate for a week the minting of the Genesis property. It's always the second week of June. So it's a week long of activities, special activities, celebrations, competitions in Upland. Usually like a lot of, you know, new features and new kind of like discussions that we raise introduce to the Upland community. And then ever since last year, we started the tradition of doing it the grand finale, the last day in person in Las Vegas. So last year was the first time. It was really great. But the greatest thing was seeing the community for the first time meet each other in person. And it's so fun. It's just an amazing experience.
I could definitely relate to that with the EOS community. We're kind of in the planning phases for a community conference. There hasn't really been a big one since 2019. But we've been doing the conference tours now for the last 9 months pretty hard. So we've been bumping into community members in real life, especially post COVID. It's just like, it's so much different in real life than online and meeting your community and also forging those relationships. For example, like the EOS Hackathon, I met Derek and like we've been in touch sporadically over the last 5 years because of an in-person EOS event.
Absolutely. Like in-person connections, like there's, you can't do without it. And even like, it's funny, like you may have people that don't necessarily, let's call it, agree online and they have their like dissent. And when they meet in person, it's like, oh my God, hugs and kisses. And it's just,
it's so great. Like, even on voice calls, the people that fight on their keyboards, when you put them on a video call or a voice call, it's like everyone's human.
And you're allowed to be an asshole when you get to actually live with the consequences.
You mentioned, I have some questions about Upland lore, and you mentioned a Genesis property, which is kind of interesting because, you know, in blockchain, we have Genesis blocks. Never thought about a Genesis property before, but of course there was the first original. What is that property, and does, do you pass it from person to person, or is it just held by, like, how is it held, or what's that all about?
So the story behind that, so a bit of history. So it used to be the fact that Upland employees were not allowed to play Upland, just because they are, you know, it's real assets and you can trade them. And, you know, some employees are exposed to information that is not available to the general community. We just thought that it was the kind of like the safest way was just not to allow anybody to play it. And it's been, by the way, it's been a real struggle because it's really hard not to eat your own dog food. And by the way, a couple of months ago, we changed a bit the policy. So we are allowed to play, but we're not allowed to compete in live events. And we're not allowed to hold assets beyond pro level. So we can only hold up to $100 worth of assets. And by the way, for me, it's been a phenomenal thing because I'm now able to kind of like own some assets. I own a car in Upland. I can race. I can check it out. Everybody can actually now start actually experiencing the game. But it wasn't the case then. But the problem was when we launched our first iteration of Upland, and that would have been probably, I think, June 2019. That was when we launched on the mainnet. We had to test somehow the very first minting. And I actually minted the very first property in Upland. And I actually have a video of that I shared with the community by then of the recording of that minting. And I think it was, I can't remember the address, but I think it was in Jefferson Street in San Francisco. You know, we can look at it. And then what we did was in our first Genesis week, which was a year later, we gave that property as a prize, as a grand prize of Genesis competition. So now I'm not sure who holds it in the game, but they're you know, somebody owns it, and it is the very first minted property.
Sorry, I was gonna bring up you had in the notes you wanted to ask about the llama, and I wanted to know if there's llama NFTs and if the llama has a name, and was the llama there at Genesis?
Yes and yes and yes. No, so we try not to use the llama in like NFTs, There may be some block explorers around with people asking for they want the llama, right? But it's not the llama, it's not kind of like. So the name is Miles B. Chain. That's the name of Miles. You know, he or she, we're not really sure, has been around for forever, right? Since we launched. And you know, basically that's it. It's a mascot. Everybody for some reason loves the llama, including us. Yeah. And again, we try not to intertwine it into the ecosystem itself, but it's usually there, you know, with the app icons and with, you know, when we have blog posts, it, you know, you would see Miles doing different things. We have different styles of it. Some are more editorial, some are kind of like more 2D, but I think it's fun. It's great. It's a branding question. It's a branding question that I think most, if not the vast majority of our consumers love and appreciate. And it's just a fun little thing.
It's a very gamer themed. I mean, Fortnite has a thing with llamas too. There's probably a bunch of other games with the llamas. I know a token 2049, I think it was the London one. They had a llama there to basically just get selfies with. I don't know what it is about llamas, but people love llamas, and Upland Llama is a very nice design.
Yeah.
Let me get into
it's like a llama.
Do you ever get into the llama versus llama pronunciation debate? It's anyone ever correct you? Like, is it llama?
I've not heard the llama. Like, who's like?
Yeah. Well, double L. It's a Spanish word. It's a double L. So technically, it's llama. And a llama would be like a Tibetan holy person. So sometimes people take issue with that pronunciation.
What I'm guessing is most of the communication is, and this happens to me all the time. There's so many words I use on the internet because I type them, and I probably would say them wrong. So it's probably not the word llama is probably not spoken that much, but this reminds me of yet another thing we talked about at GDC is the chat integration into Upland.
Yeah.
Let's talk about that.
Yeah. So again, we always said in Upland, play, earn, connect, but that used to be our motto and our tagline. And you know, we have play in Upland, we have earn in Upland. We didn't do a really good job on the connect part. And it used to be the fact that all of the connections happen outside of Upland, usually through Discords and other kind of like social channels. And it's just a great shame twofold. One, because why not? You're missing out on a lot of activity that you can take in game. But the other thing is, again, the majority of players don't go to Discord. They are in the game, but they're not aware of all the discussions, all the things that are happening. So it was really important for us to start bringing all that engagement, all those conversations, all those connections into Upland. And I think we launched that late December, if I'm not mistaken, of 2022. And it's been like one of the best received features in Upland. We have now tons of activity. We're slowly moving channels from Discord inside the app. And to be honest, I think like every game needs to do that to some extent, right? Like you want that engagement, and you want that to capitalize on people who are actually spending time in the game. And every time two players are communicating with each other, that's a win. And this is going to be just the first stage, right? So it's kind of like this master, you know, Discord-like communication where you can do DMs to each other, you can participate in channels, etc. But then there's more contextualized elements that are going to be in the future. So for example, what if I look at an NFT and each NFT is the context of discussion? So each NFT becomes a channel and the owner of the NFT is the moderator, right? So now it's basically like the Facebook wall, but for NFTs in kind of like a modern chat environment. So that's kind of like level two. And then the final one, which we are starting to introduce all into Upland, that's kind of like the immersive connection. So walk into a space where your 3D avatar and now actually, you know, engage with players with spatial audio, with kind of like maybe streams that are going on in places like cafes and stuff like that. So we have a lot of plans for the Connect pillar. And we strongly believe that this is one of the game changers at the end of the day. This is what will, again, there's the value proposition, there's the gaming, there's the fun, but the social engagement that happens inside of the game, that's going to be the glue that binds everything together.
I love it. That's why I can't believe I forgot about it. It wasn't even in the notes. That's such a important feature, because I do agree, especially whenever there's commerce and marketplace involved, like people and in collaboration with like these metaverse businesses, for example, it makes it easier, because if I only know your blockchain account, like, and I want to get in touch with you to have a conversation, like some applications, there's not even a way to do that unless like there's a profile system where you could like link it to your Telegram account, to your Discord handle or something. So there, you removing a potential point of friction for people to connect. Like you said, what is it? Play, earn, and connect. Connect is very, very important to kind of grow and maintain a community.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And today, I think like we're always blown away with the numbers because, again, we have currently, while it's still kind of like a beta-ish feature, we have an opt-in to chat. So you're not automatically rolled into chat. And every month, and it's going month to month, we have like more than 30,000 active humans who have elected to participate in that chat feature. And this is only a subset of our entire player base, right? So it just stresses, again, you know, Zach, you said a couple of times, you know, top five blockchain game in terms of active users. We like to take pride in the fact that our active users are active humans and kind of like, you know, it's not always the case with all the games.
Yeah. So I know you've been in the metaverse space since forever, really. And you are one of the leading metaverse apps, metaverse super app. And you're also working, or you're partnered with a couple organizations that are in the metaverse space. Maybe you could talk a little bit about that. It's OMA3 and Species,
I believe. Yeah. So let's start with OMA3. I mean, OMA3 was actually an initiative of ours led by my co-founder, Dirk. And we, and Upland is one of the founding members of OMA3. The idea there was basically, OMA3 stands for, the Open Metaverse Alliance for Web3. And it's a standardization organization that has basically, with a mission to create standards for the open metaverse for the future. Again, we all have to talk about the metaverse with a capital M, when it will exist. You know, we don't know, it doesn't exist yet, but you know, what people have envisioned in the past in science fiction and what we strongly believe is that it is going to be a series of different games and worlds and platforms that are somehow going to be interconnected. And it may begin maybe just with identity. So you can, as an experience, as a player, you can take your identity and start moving from one world to another. But it may also be about your assets. We strongly believe that the open metaverse will rely on infrastructure of true ownership. Because if you have a digital existence and that has digital assets, and especially if they are interoperable and movable between worlds, it's just really difficult to imagine that without true ownership happening. And the OMA3 is an organization, by the way, by now we have, I think, more than 1,000 companies that have kind of like signed up to the organization. We're actively working on creating standards for the open metaverse. So there are different standardization groups. I personally participate in kind of like a group that's called the portaling group, the group that kind of like tries to envision, okay, what does it look like when a user goes from one platform or game to another, and what are the standards that need to be in place to actually allow that? And then how does it coincide with Web3 elements, like, you know, like for your identity, for your land, etc. So these are fascinating places to be at, actually, to actually take these, you know, slow but very initial steps to building an interoperable potential future for the metaverse. So that's OMA3. And then another
real quick
initiative.
Yeah, real quick, just to follow up on that. So OMA3, it's Open Metaverse Association. Is that right?
I think it's Alliance, but yeah.
Alliance, Open Metaverse Alliance. And I noticed it says like strives to create an open metaverse that is community run, decentralized, indexable. Can you just say briefly a little bit about the values that you guys are trying to infuse in this open metaverse? Because it strikes me as rather interesting.
The
way that you're approaching it.
So, you know, I think today there are two main standardization organizations that has to do with the metaverse. One is called OMA3, which we just talked about, and the other is MSF. It's the Metaverse Standards Forum. And today it's predominantly composed of Web2. You know, companies and worlds is like Facebook and Microsoft, Nvidia, and you know, probably some other gaming companies as well. And by the way, OMA3 is a member of MSF as well, as kind of like a company. And first of all, there's going to be collaboration between these two, But then OMA 3 will be more focused on the Web 3 parts of standardizing the open metaverse. And at some point, I believe these organizations will either work tightly together or somehow merge or whatever. But again, you need to understand that if you try to envision the metaverse in the future, it has to be the case that some parts of it will be open, some parts of it will be closed, some parts of it will have true ownership, some parts of it will not. It's not going to be like this homogeneous thing, right? There's no reason if I have a very, very cool Web2 game, right? Whatever, let's say GTA or whatever game that is, you know, has a lot of quality and a lot of production value and a lot of people play it. And all they want to do is allow players to take their identity and participate in the world, even though it doesn't have an open economy and it doesn't, right? There's no reason why it shouldn't be a part of the metaverse in the future. So I think there are going to be different elements, and OMA 3 is going to be focused on the standards that have to do with Web 3, you know, open economies, decentralized ownership, true ownership, etc.
And that's at OMA 3, the number 3.org, if anyone wants more information on that.
Cool. Also in the notes.
And then the second initiative we're working on, which literally we just launched, is called Fishes Foundation. Again, it also has to do a lot with the open metaverse. And the idea there is really simple, but really, really ambitious. It's to create a decentralized ecosystem with the aim of taking all species of life and mapping them into a unified digital repository so they can be then adopted by any game, virtual world, or platform in the metaverse. And those species of life will come with a complete set of metadata that describes them, you know, how they move, how they behave, how they reproduce. Do they consume energy? Do they output energy, right? And then it makes it really easy for any game or platform to adopt it. This came actually from an actual need from Upland. When we started thinking about what it would take to start introducing life into Upland, we always knew Upland needs to have life. It's not just inanimate objects, right? It has to have trees and plants and pets and farm animals. And when we thought about, okay, are we going to do it on our own? It occurred to us that, you know, this is not a task for one single centralized team. You want, like, Upland is going to be an adopter of the output of this decentralized effort at the end of the day. And we want to enjoy the fruits of, and by the way, the Species Foundation, I think to my mind, is one of the most interesting demonstrations of how valuable tokenomic models that solve real-world problems can be used to solve problems that wouldn't have been solvable otherwise. Like, how do you get potentially 10,000 creators to work on the same repository, right, to create something that is unachievable by a single team, right? And you have to use incentive mechanisms and again, Web3 and tokens are a perfect candidate to achieve these types of grandiose tasks.
So with the Species Foundation in particular, someone on the website, and I see all the like the 3D models of a bear, a cow, a duck. What would the incentive be? So there's a standard with all of the metadata that everyone follows. I create a chicken on my own. Like, is my incentive to submit the chicken into the Species Foundation, is it so I can get access to everyone else's? Is that like a membership thing where is it open for anyone, even if they're not contributing to it?
Yeah.
How does that work?
So I'll be very brief about it. Because, you know, that could be a whole podcast, by the way. Come back to do a Species Catalog podcast. But basically, there are three elements. So the only reason why we have token and tokenomics is to incentivize creators to put in their creations. There's a very interesting system where you have a fungible token called DNA and an unfungible token called species. You need DNA to create species as kind of like the initiator of that species. But once you initiate it, then any creator can contribute to it. So basically, we wanted to remove any aspect of speculation from the equation, right? We don't want people to now, if you wanted to create a chicken but not do anything without it, right? We don't want that, right? Because we need the chicken to be available. So once you've created the chicken, any creator can come contribute. And there's a whole governance system that moves that species from ideation to finalization. And once it's finalized, it can then be adopted by the participating world. Now, who funds all these things? The adopting worlds, they would pay for the use of this. So if it's a Web2 world, it can definitely be a Web2 game. I don't know if have you ever heard of Zoo Tycoon by Microsoft, for example, right? If I wanted to create a zoo simulation, right? I can suddenly create a game with 10,000 species in it, which is amazing, right? But then I would pay like a Web2 licensing model. And that payment would then flow to the creators of the species that game is using. And if it's a Web3, it could be based on, you know, secondary market transactions. So in Upland, for example, there are going to be duck NFTs, but they're not going to be the species NFT. They're going to be internal to Upland, right? But every time ducks get moved around or there's any transaction associated with it, some part of it will go as royalties to the species foundation. And that will be distributed again to the creators.
What's next for Upland? Like, what we have the ongoing hackathon, but we have OMA 3, we've got species. What are some of the things in the next couple of months that people could expect to see coming out of Upland?
Oh man, there's so much. So with the Genesis Week coming up, and that's a lot of times we are engaged with that. There's gonna be a lot of cool content and announcements coming up in the next months. We are diligently continuing to work on our roadmap, and I encourage everybody to go check out our roadmap. It's publicly available on our website. And it's kind of like an ever-living document that we update every couple of weeks. So it's really, it's not like your standard, you know, Web3 roadmap where it's like once written, never met, and never updated. It's actually a living roadmap. And we're charging on all fronts. So it's going to be an amazing year.
Is there anything else that you wanted to plug before we wrap this up?
No, only thing, like if you're listening and you're not yet, you've not checked out Upland yet, definitely go download it, play around, introduce yourself to the community. It's a whole world to discover. And, you know, it's funny, like we've been doing this for 4 years now, but I still feel like this is still the ground level. We're still at kind of shore zero.
Awesome. And that's at upland.me. All of the links are obviously in the description. Thank you so much for joining us.
And one last thing, Zach, I want to say, like, I think it's amazing what you guys have done with the ENFs and kind of like the whole kind of like community. It's like a phoenix raising out of the ashes, and it's amazing. And we love everything you're doing, and you know, you have our full support.
Likewise, I tell people this, like, before we even started, I guess, working a little bit more closely, like, you guys are the flagship application on EOS right now. I think you made a joke at GDC about how Upland is. I think I forget what you said specifically, but like Upland is EOS.
Jokingly, but yeah.
Half jokingly.
Yeah, I mean.
At the moment, ideally there will be a lot more applications, a lot more transactions. We have the EVM coming online. By the time this podcast comes out, the EVM will be live. There will be a lot of new applications deploying at that time. But yeah, the show is about you. I appreciate the feedback. Always appreciate it. But I really just wanted to highlight Upland. I think it's an awesome application. It's a great story. You guys have been chugging along even throughout the dark years of EOS, let's call them, where there wasn't a steward kind of steering the ship. All right, so that's everything for today. Thank you so much, Idan, for joining us. Like I said, upland.me, check out Upland. Check out OMA 3, check out Species. It's all really great. We'll have to have you on again sometime soon.
Happy to.